May the towers of the tyrants crack and crumble into dust. May 10 billion voices learn to sing as one, so that the winds may turn the tides before the waters all run dry. May these days of darkness usher in the sun.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, the show that brings on great guests telling truth is rarely heard in the corporate-controlled mainstream. And, of course, we had a big event just a little bit ago, the Bilderberg meeting. Every year, the world's most powerful movers and shakers meet in secret to privately discuss the world's problems and plot, quote-unquote, solutions. It seems that the September 11th, 2008 economic collapse that was engineered through Goldman Sachs was actually a decision taken at that year's Bilderberg conference, and likewise the 2011 destabilization of Syria was also aired and decided upon at that year's Bilderberg conference. Many even believe that in 2001 the Bilderbergers gave the nod to the 9/11 inside job, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me if that's true. Well, my guest today, Ole Damgaard, was actually a featured speaker at the Bilderberg conference this year. No, not the indoor version of the conference. He's not quite that high and mighty, but he was out there with the good guys protesting the event. And it's always an honor to welcome Ole Damgaard. How are you, Ole?
I'm very blessed. Thank you.
Yeah, good to have you back. So that's great that you were able to make the Bilderberg festivities this year. Tell us about it.
It was quite an amazing experience because like I'm sure most of your listeners know, this group was the Bilderberg Group was created in 1954 in Hotel Bilderberg in Oosterbeek in Holland. It's got very Nazi roots, I would say, and it is one of the creations of the global elite that is trying to push this world into a very dark and controlled area, very controlled space. And so I've spent like 30 years trying to expose and uncover what they're up to, who are the members, their agenda, and where their meetings are. Because if you can find out the agenda, then you can also see in what direction they're trying to push the world. So when you look over the years of the agenda, the last 200 pages in my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion, that you can find on my website, lightonconspiracies.com. The last 200 pages, that is only membership list of the Bilderberg Group, their agenda that has been exposed, and also where they were meeting, because they keep moving around every year. They've got one meeting and it's always in a new location, normally very super secret, with lots of protection, coverage and so on around. So it's very difficult to get anywhere nearby. So this year, I had the fortune of being invited up there by some truth seekers in Denmark that sent me a plane ticket. So I went up there, and I expected to find the normal type of setting, which is the way they normally meet is in some kind of super luxury hotel, five-star thing, but most of the time in an area quite secluded, so it's difficult for normal people to get anywhere near. With very little insight from the public and so on, so that they can get a, do their business without being disturbed in any way or form. And normally this is, as far as I know, it's always been very, very secure. The parameters has always been very secure by armed police, sometimes military, helicopters, you name it, the lot. I mean, these people have the best of the best at their support, at their service, so they can do these things. So I arrived in Copenhagen, Denmark. That is where it was supposed to be held this year, at the Marriott Hotel, right in central Copenhagen, which I found very odd, I must say, to start with.
That's nice of them to be so considerate of you protesters to have the event in a nice, easily accessible area.
This is the whole thing. It just did not make any sense at all. I mean, 2013 was the first year they couldn't hide their existence anymore. They tried for years and years, but so many have woken up the last 5-10 years, and so
yeah,
the spotlight.
Thanks to people like you and Daniel Estulin, and you know, people who've been exposing this, and finally the last couple of years, everybody's noticed.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Daniel, and people like myself. We're really trying our best, you know, to expose this, because it's only by revealing what is going on and exposing groups like this, because they are one of the central groups, not the only one, but they're very central in this whole package. It's only by exposing them that we can stop it, you know, because they are very active, like a secret world government, working in the shadows and controlling things without, like a hidden hand, without most of us even being aware of their existence.
You know, I was very busy while this Bilderberg meeting was going on. I was in a conference in Iran, so I didn't have a chance to really follow it or, you know, go and look at pictures. But, you know, downtown, middle of central Copenhagen, Denmark, I imagine that it must have been really a great place to have your protests, because, you know, the Danish government is well known for being fairly, you know, easy to deal with, and the transportation system is great. I mean, it must have been a really good place to do this.
Yeah, it was very considerate of them, you know. It's like, so the whole truth movement could easily get there and be put into a fenced-in area and controlled. And
oh, really? They fenced you off?
Yeah, they started doing that last year in Watford, outside London. That was the first year they couldn't get away with it anymore. So that year, they got the whole truth movement fenced in an area about a kilometer away from the hotel, you know, with police surveillance, all of these type of things, helicopters, everything.
They call that a free speech zone, right? When they put up barbed wire, they corral you into the barbed wire pen, and then they fly helicopters over your head, and then you can say anything you want as long as the helicopter noise drowns it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They're very considerate, very good-hearted. So a bit like Adolf Hitler, I would say. But the thing was that when I arrived to the airport, I was, for one thing, you know, there was no security at the airport, nothing unusual like that. So that sort of got me a little, surprised. But also that the name of the hotel came out so early this year. Normally they keep it very secret until... Well, normally it leaks out like a couple of weeks before or something.
Yeah, usually like a cook or a chambermaid contacts Daniel Estulin, and that's how we find out.
Yeah. Normally it was Jim Tucker who had people on the inside and that. But he died last year. So anyway, so I came there and I was expecting, you know, the normal scene, surveillance, bomb sniffing dogs, helicopters, snipers, these type of things, lots of police and so on, because I arrived about 12 hours before they were supposed to start arriving to the hotel. And when I arrived there, there was zero protection. There was nothing, absolute zero. There were two Danish police officers standing doing zero. And the rest of the hotel was totally open, you know. And it was like, I got just like, what? That it was so odd. And there was hardly any people there. It was me, a few people from InfoWars, like a few pedestrians. That was it. Nothing else. And then there were some people who had started building up like a concrete wall around the hotel, like a 1 meter high wall where they put fence around the hotel and so on. So I found that super odd, you know. So I started walking around in the area, checking out like, why on earth would they choose this hotel? I mean, they got the whole world open to them. So why on earth pick this one? Because let me just describe the location. It is in central Copenhagen. It's just like, I would say, 500 meters from the main railroad station. And like the hotel is right on the brink of a big water canal, you know, like at least, I would say, 500 meters wide. And with a big part of Copenhagen on the other side of the canal, meaning absolute nightmare to protect it from that direction. You know, if you feared like an attack with a bazooka or a Stinger missile, do you know, one of these type, if you really feared that, you would have to secure half of Copenhagen, you know. So absolutely weird place to choose. And then I started studying the whole area, and one of the main streets are passing right outside the hotel. And then on the other side, exactly opposite the hotel, there's a big open space that is normally used by the Danish police as a parking area, because the police headquarters are like 200 meters in front of the hotel. So you got the hotel, Main Street, and this open area that they fenced in for the truth movement or anyone who wanted to come and protest or whatever, that would be very guarded by the police. And then on the other side of that were the headquarters of the Danish police, the main national police headquarters. Then on the side, the two sides of this big open space, there are insurance companies and bank companies, all owned by members in the elite, or controlled by them. So the whole setup really, it gave me the creeps, because I thought it is such a lousy choice for security. But if they have chosen it, it must be a perfect location for something else. So I thought option one, a decoy. You know, you get the whole truth movement into this control area where the police check have control over you, and then you send in a few doubles in the hotel. You know, somebody looks like Queen Beatrix, just get the hairdo right, you know, a double in there. You just see somebody pass in there, old guy, white hair, oh, that was Henry Kissinger. I mean, it's not that difficult to get away with a thing like that.
Right, you know, so is that somebody in a Dick Cheney mask?
Something like that.
You can't tell those masks from the real Cheney. They both look so hideous.
Yeah, and also you don't get anywhere near. But we were like less than 100 meters from the entrance, and they even let it open so the view was open so you could see who arrived and so on. Absolute a joke when it comes to security. So I started looking around, and I noticed that the whole area could be controlled by them. You know, and what they've done as well was that they had put three black limos, identical, right, Mercedes, right outside the entrance. No people around, just like saying, like putting a business card saying, yes, we are here. You know, we normally come in these type of vehicles. Yes, this is the hotel. But no people. We could walk up all the way, you know, looking through the windows. I know InfoWars was behind the building, filming in through the windows and so on. And the whole hotel is made of glass, so you can see in as well. So you can see like in the corridors and so on. And the buildings around it are not like American high rises, but from a Danish point of view, high, you know, as high as the hotel. So very, very odd. So I thought first decoy, that would be one option. And then, since I've been looking into false flag operation for decades, suddenly it hit me like, oh my God, this is a perfect setup for a false flag thing to demonize the whole truth movement and knock them out globally in one go.
There you go. Yeah. They could have fired a, you know, a stinger from one of those other buildings or from Copenhagen or something and blown up all that glass. It would be pretty ugly.
No, the thing was that last year, just when the Bilderberg meeting was supposed to take place, just a few days before that, I would claim that this is the reason why, they made a massive diversion for the media with the so-called beheading in Woolwich. Do you remember that?
That was very strange, wasn't it?
That whole story didn't really add up. It's the worst false fact, my absolute favorite, because it's so sloppy, so bad.
Yeah, they should have hired the guys that worked with Alice Cooper back in the 1975 or whenever it was, that, you know, Alice Cooper used to go around staging rock and roll shows beheading babies. Yeah. And that wasn't very realistic either, but I think that he actually was better at it than these guys.
For sure, it was absolute staged and very badly carried out. Nobody was hurt. All of it was just set up. I normally give interviews about this one. I can go on for about an hour or so. Just go into details and you will find out it's an absolute joke. It was so badly pulled off. Anyway, but it worked very well to divert the attention away from the Bilderberg meeting and towards blaming the Muslims. You know, blame the Muslims, divert the whole thing, get the whole society going, you know, blaming a minority that had absolutely nothing to do with anything and get the attention away from this meeting. So false flag operations is not something that they don't use. I mean, they use it on such a regular basis with all these false flag
We're getting about a shooting a day now here in the USA.
Yeah, the agenda is scare of the week. I don't know if it's down to scare of the day, but the agenda is scare of the week now. They need to keep you, the attention diverted, so you don't even have time to really get into details anymore about one shooting, then the next one, then the next one. But if you will see, I would say, according to the agenda, it would be one per week, and they're not very flexible. So I would say, if you look in the calendar, there would be one a week, not two 1 week, and then none for 2 weeks. It would be one a week.
Which day of the week are they using?
That I don't know. Maybe
we'll have to figure this out.
Yeah, it could be interesting looking into it, because they're not very. It's like, when you film Rocky 18, it's not easy to come up with a new idea when you're trying to pull the same thing off,
Right.
Oh,
right.
Who are we going to pick for Patsy this time? Where we used the Russians, we need the Romanian, we used a lot of the Muslims. Who are we going to use? Now it's gone into more Scandinavian looking, like the last one was, he almost looked like a model. And so it's not easy for them, to come up with new ideas. But,
right. Well, they just had a truther, a conspiracy theorist, dress up as the Joker and give a rant about taking over the world with the New World Order. And then he and his girlfriend go and shout, "The revolution has started." And they shoot a cop, and then they shoot an innocent bystander in Walmart, and then supposedly commit suicide. I mean, this, talk about a setup. I mean, this is, and so that's going to rebound probably against the truth movement to a certain extent.
But this is the whole thing, Kevin, and this is what I'm going to describe to you now, what they were up to in Copenhagen, because I tell you, that one could have been a massive blow. The whole thing was that once I started seeing the whole setup, it got quite eerie, because what if I, coming from my experience of how they carry these things out, if I followed their way of thinking, what you would do is you would place a TV team or film crews in different angles, because you control all the different buildings. So you would have one crew down the road, wide angle, so that you could cover both the area of the truth movement and the hotel from the sides, because what you would do is, you would send in, you get the whole truth movement in there. Hopefully, now I'm talking from their point of view, 1,000, 2,000 people in there, crowd could totally controlled by the police, who would not be aware of that this was a false flag being pulled off. They would not have any knowledge that this would, that the target would be to turn this into a massacre. Absolutely.
Of course,
not.
That would be on a need to know basis.
Exactly. So they would have no idea. So what you would do is you would have a more or less empty hotel, that would be totally filled with explosives, just like in Oklahoma City and so on. Then you would send in a few doubles. You would send in some limos with doubles and so on. But in total, the hotel would be more or less empty. Then also what they would do, one of the reasons maybe they would have chosen that hotel would be, maybe it had some kind of problems in the foundation, due to it being very close to the water. Maybe it would have asbestos or some reason that it needed a major repair that they didn't want to spend money on. So the insurance would be changed, like a week before, to include terror acts. That would be part of it.
And Larry Silverstein would buy that hotel about a month before.
There you
and
go.
And double the insurance.
I mean, just check out the template. That's what I'm saying. Study history, see how it's pulled off, look out for the signs, and you will just see what's going on. So you would put explosives inside the building. Then you would place like smoke bombs and secondary explosives in the area where the truth movement would be. These would be concealed with like boxes or maybe parking meters, odd looking parking meters or odd location of the parking meters, but inside the area for the truth movement. And then once you got the whole crowd in there, I mean, most of these people are very, peaceful and friendly, so you would need some provocateurs to get the whole thing going, because what they need is action, like a a film stage. You know, you need action, you need smoke, you need explosions to pull this thing off in media. Because so, the
they probably dress somebody up like the Joker. Just
they
like
could
this
do
other
thing,
guy in the U.S.
They could do that, but the whole idea would you know, send in a handful of provocateurs. These people would you know, suddenly start screaming, shouting things, throwing things, maybe a Molotov cocktail or two. And if that wouldn't stir the whole energy of the crowd, then what they would do is send in other members of this team of provocateurs. But these would be dressed in Danish police uniforms, and one of them or two of them would look like truth seeker, you know, like the, one of the truthers. So they would unjustly arrest one of these guys right in front of the crowd on the other side of the fence, and just drag this guy screaming along the fence, getting the whole crowd going. You know, this, it's so easy to get the crowd going, because they would go like, let him go. Or maybe they would just start to, you know, hit him a bit like that. That would really get the whole thing going. So when you stir the energy like that, once the stage is set, then, and the crowd is going wild, then suddenly, boom, out goes, you blow the whole front of the building out.
Jeez,
on top,
you know, they should hire you to choreograph this, Ole. You sound pretty good at it.
I'm just studying what they're doing. That's why I can describe it. You know, so they blow the whole front out of the building on top of the truth movement. They control the buildings on the sides. And also because it's a totally open space, they will not be damaged at all. So it will only be the hotel that they need to, the whole thing would just be blown up, totally going straight forward on top of the truth movement. And then with the secondary smoke bombs and so on, the whole thing, you know, within seconds would look like a total war zone. You've got the wide angle team down the road filming the whole thing. You got aerial footage with helicopters and so on. And then you would right away pump out the media. Oh my God, look at this truth movement. My God, they say they're peaceful. They say they just want a better world for us all to live in. And look, they just blown up this poor, innocent elite group who just want a nice cup of coffee.
And then they could give, you know, all these elite guys, they could give them facelifts, which they all need anyway. They're all, you know, Brzezinski is what, 98 years old, David Rockefeller, 99, whatever. These guys are so hideous that they could all use a facelift and a new identity with all those wonder drugs they're getting, you know, spleen from the baboon glands to keep them alive. They might as well get these facelifts and new identities and run the world from total anonymity. Hey, you know, Ole, I think they need to hire you and me to to figure out how to pull this stuff off.
So what they would have done was, you know, some people would be killed in there. That would be like drivers, cleaners, security people, maybe from the kitchen, and then throw in a couple of old Bilderbergers that they maybe had problems with anyway, or that they could spare, just to give it credibility.
There you go. See, they would want to get rid of a couple of them, you know, the peacenicks.
I'm sure.
The troublemakers.
Sure. The trouble, you know, blow them up and get rid of them. So, and then blame it, the whole thing, it would come out within minutes, the truth movement would be accused of this, and then that would be used to ban all rights to demonstrate, all rights to protest. It would be a big tool to censor the internet, you know, saying because the truth movement is using the internet to spread information on this, so we need to totally censor it. And
that'd probably be the end of Truth Jihad Radio. I think that that name would probably be too hot for the post to blow up the Bilderbergers era.
It would be the end of a lot of things, I tell you. So, and also control the amount of people that can gather in a group. You know, they're always afraid of big groups, you know, big gatherings of people. So that would also be one reason that they would ban, maybe that more than eight people at a time could meet. You know, it's just a matter of checking out how they've done it through history. I mean, Stalin, Hitler, Khomeini used that as well, that you are not allowed to be more than a certain amount of people to meet up like that in the street and so on. So it's that in one go, they could hit very, very badly, you know. So when I noticed that, I just got, oh my God, what am I going to do with this info? Maybe I'm just paranoid, but
Well, of course we're all paranoid, but that doesn't mean they're not out to get us.
Exactly. So what I did, I went straight to my friend's house and I called up Chip Tatum. You know, Chip Tatum is a former deep cover CIA agent for 25 years.
Yeah, I had him on for a two-hour episode recently on the show, and he sure has some tales to tell.
He sure has, and he is not an amateur. I mean, he was one of the top secret assassins of the Pegasus, George Bush Sr.'s privately controlled hit team that he used globally. He was also one of the Night Stalker pilots. He was also one of the pilots in Iran-Contras, the whole thing, drugs in, weapons out, drugs in, and also a black op assassin who has taken part in false flag operations before. So he is not an amateur.
Now well, Chip's a pretty tough character, but and he had to be to survive after turning HW down in a direct order to assassinate Ross Perot. Chip said, hey, look, you know, sure, I've killed a bunch of people for you, but I'm not going to kill American citizens because they're running against you in an election. Yeah. And he was able to escape with his life. Quite a guy.
Quite a guy, that's what I say as well. So I called him. I described the whole situation, the location, the buildings, everything. He said, sounds very, very spooky. He said, but what about security on the water side? Were there any military vessels, divers, these type of things? I said, there was nothing, nothing. And this is like less than 12 hours before they arrived. He says, get out. This is the stage place. Get out. He said, be aware of strange packages, cables, wires, strange sounds, strange people, these type of things. But I said, I'm absolutely not getting out. I'm going to be there on location. But what I'm going to do is, I also called Jim Fetzer as well, got his input, you know, a former Marine, and who has looked into lots of these black ops. Stu Webb was also totally confirming that my suspicion could be right. So what I did was I spent half the night just pumping out to different radio stations internationally, you know, New Zealand, Canada, States, Europe, just saying, please record the time and date when this info is given out and recorded. This is my suspicion. May God forbid that it happened. But if it happens, then please notice that this was recorded beforehand and this is not the truest moment. It is a totally inside job. And could you please just get it on air as soon as possible? So all these beautiful radio hosts, they reacted immediately, you know, boom, 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 boom. So it went out there during the night. It just went all over the globe. And then in the morning, you know, I was there just a few hours later, 8 o'clock in the morning. I was one of the first people there. Can you imagine what I found in this parking lot? I found a 6 meter big pentagram made of train sleepers right in the area where the Truth Movement was supposed to gather. I mean, can you imagine the aerial footage, like bomb, the smoke, the bodies, and then right in the center of this whole thing where the Truth Movement is, a pentagram. And it wasn't even one, there were two pentagrams, one of train sleepers. I don't know if you know how big 6 meters are, but that is it's a big pentagram, I tell you. And next to it, there was another pentagram made of like traffic cones, these orange things, and then with tape pulled in a pentagon pattern, and then in the middle of it they put a barbecue, like a grill, you know, make barbecues on.
Sounds like they're getting ready to barbecue somebody in one of their human sacrifices.
The thing is, like, when you see how the elite uses this this symbolism and also the pentagram, which is such a powerful, very, very not nice symbol, I would say. And then sometimes with a fire right in the center, and there was this barbecue scene. So I just thought, oh my God, the impact that this could have. So what I did is right away, I just pulled the whole thing apart. You know, I was sweating like a pig. Me and one of my friends was helping me, just pulling it aside, you know, so that they couldn't use it. And
so you guys took down their pentagram.
Right away.
Wow. So between putting the word out about this and then tearing apart their pentagram, you know, you may have saved the world, Ole.
I don't want to polish my halo, but I feel proud of what I did. I feel that I got a very, very bad feeling from what was set up there, because I strongly feel, and also when Chip and Stu and Jim Fetz and so on, all of them confirmed my suspicions, I just thought, this is, I can't just be quiet, you know. So also what was interesting, I think, what happened was that in the morning, there was still no security, very, very little, you know, like nothing.
How weird.
And there was weird. You tell me. Very
yeah, because in the past, you know, Bilderberg has been legendary for this insane level of security, even though nobody had heard about it. Now that everybody's heard about it, you would kind of think that they would have even more security.
Thank you, Kevin. Right, my way of arguing. Exactly. So even in the morning, and so these limos started arriving, but they're said to be 140 guests, and they normally come in one or two in each limo. And I only saw a handful of limos, and the people that went got out of the cars, never seen them before. Never seen them before. Went in there. Some of them, you could see them inside the building, you know, they had name tags on, and some of them were waving to the crowd, and it was just like, this is not real, you know. I just felt, they're not in there. They are not in there. And then the rumor was spreading that they were meeting at a castle called Kokkedal, just outside Copenhagen, and that this whole thing was a decoy. And I think a decoy used for this massacre thing, because they didn't want to be anywhere nearby if it blew up. So once the rumors started going, also in the newspapers, it said that there were 2,000-3,000 people, protesters, but we were like a handful, I think maximum 200 in total.
That's bizarre. You know? It usually works the other way around. Normally the media grossly underestimates the number of protesters.
Yep, but not when false flag operations are going, because then they in media they start pumping out this, you know, if they want to demonize a patsy or if they want to, you know, pump up the pressure, this is when they start leaking this totally false information out there. And 2,000 people when there's like 113, I mean, does not make any sense if we're not talking a false flag, you know. So I thought that was really odd as well. And while we were there, I mean, we were so few, you know. There were these people came running. Some people, I don't know who they were, came and said, oh, my God, you know, there are other protesters that are protesting against the protesters, and they're on their way here. It's going to be horrible, you know.
With Bilderberg counter-protesters? Give me a break. What are we talking about? Like little spoiled rich kids, like the children of the multi-billionaire elite, all coming with their signs to protest, to stop protesting Bilderberg.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. And there was, I don't know who these people were who came running and saying these things, you know. But, I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing. It was just weird, you know. And anyway, so in the morning, I saw very, very few limos coming. And then it felt like almost like, let's say that this thing, that this false flag was a real thing that was supposed to be pulled off. It felt almost like plan A was blow the whole thing up. They met meet in total secrecy somewhere else. But then when this was blown off, you know, the cover was destroyed for that operation, they needed to go to plan B, which was to get into the hotel to give themselves the alibi of, no, we were in there. I mean, how can you accuse us of doing a horrible thing like that? So suddenly, late on the Friday evening, I think, suddenly the security totally changed, you know. Suddenly there were NATO troops behind the building, you know, military vessels. There were snipers on the roofs. There were military helicopters coming very, very low down over the area.
Well, this must have come as a relief to you.
It was like different, you know. I still don't think they were in there. Yeah, I don't know if they were in there. I just know that way too few limos, it was just the security, everything was just odd there, you know. So
but you didn't see any recognizable Bilderberger faces or anything going in.
I saw Queen Beatrix. I mean, somebody with a hairdo like that. Somebody,
it's either Queen Beatrix or somebody who looked like her.
There you go. I mean, go to Las Vegas and you will see Elvis, you know. I mean,
I think I saw Elvis and Beatrix actually standing side by side at the slot machine in Vegas once.
There you go.
The machine.
There you go. I mean, I'm sure Michael Jackson was there as well. It's like, I don't know. You just see like 1 second of somebody passing in through a door. And why on earth did they leave that area open? Because they covered the whole entrance, you know, where the limos came, but exactly where the door opening is, when they got in and out of the cars, that's where it was open so that people could take photos. Do you know what I'm saying? It does not make any sense.
Oh, very interesting. So it could have still been a decoy, continuing a decoy operation, but they decided not to do a false flag, so they put in the plan B to make it look like there were Bilderbergers there.
Do you know, there was this rumor spreading that it was a decoy. I was one of them spreading it big time because I do you know, it did not make any sense at all. And then right in the middle when this was being talked about, suddenly there was this NATO general that went out jogging, you know, he went out jogging for a few minutes, people took photos, he went back in, almost like saying, but we are in here, you know, look at me, I'm jogging, you know, so.
The jogging general.
A jogging general, maybe he was one of them that was supposed to be blown up, I don't know, but it was just, but then after that, I think it was on the second day, it's hard for me to keep the days apart because I was doing interviews nonstop from early morning to late, so I can't keep the days apart, you know. But I think it was on the second day, then suddenly there were people, you know, Luke Rudovsky and Dan Dix from Canada, they saw some Goldman Sachs people and interviewed them and so on. They went out to the airport as well and they did a great job, these two guys. They got arrested as well. And I almost got arrested as well. It was like unreal. But it was the very eerie feeling. But then the whole atmosphere changed over the day, you know, from being people were in the first day in the beginning very frustrated, tired, you know, people who haven't been awake for such a long time, who's been into this dark area, you know, studying day and night and having no one to talk to because their friends and family can't bear listening to them. And
no, don't tell us anymore about the Bilderberg.
Yeah,
we don't want to hear it.
It's too dark. It's too dark. Please shut up, you know. But then during the day, it just transformed into, I thought it was an absolute beautiful thing. And I gave a speech right outside the Bilderberg meeting with one of these. When I accepted coming there, I said the only thing I prefer not to do is giving public speeches with a bullhorn. What did I do? Give public speeches with a bullhorn.
Oh, you and Alex Jones, huh?
I know, but I'm not a screaming type of person, you know.
No, you're not. Trying to imagine you with a bullhorn, you know, the way you talk on my radio show, it just wouldn't really bullhorn properly. Now, Alex, the way he talks on the radio show, blah, 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 blah. Now, that works on a bullhorn.
Yeah,
he is a bullhorn. He's a human bullhorn.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know. I come from a piece of, from a place of, I just wanted to stop, you know. I really don't want to spread fear or hate or revenge or anything like that. I just wanted to stop by fearlessly exposing what is going on, you know. And the thing was, it was amazing because when I came, it was the first time I gave a speech like that in an open space and with a bullhorn like that. And I don't know what I was talking about hardly, but when I stopped, people came running up and I got a group hug from about 40 people. So it was unreal. It was cool. Such a beautiful experience because right behind me were this hotel where people had gathered with such a dark and sinister agenda. And then right in front of it to have an experience like that. So it felt almost, you know, like the dark and the light meeting and some kind of almost like, I don't know what to call it. Well, cleansing of, it was like a clash of energies, you know.
Interesting.
And very interesting. And also, you know, the police came the first morning. They came in like bulletproof vests. They were riot police and not really the heavy duty guys, but they were there just in the surrounding. And then in the end, when we left the area, you know, no bulletproof vests. Some of the police had like tape put on their vest, but it said that the Danish word for love. And they were, you know, there was a dialogue between people and them. You know, they were open to start trying to understand who they were actually protecting. You know, this is also, like I mentioned, I almost got arrested because, like Alex Horn, not like Alex Horn. I mean, I'm not a loud person. I'm not a violent person. I don't do violent stuff, you know. And the thing was, this first evening, when I was just checking out the area, I was just walking down the street, you know. I did absolutely nothing. And then I came with a friend of mine. And then this police car just pulled over and stopped us. And a very nice young police officer came out. I mean, this is not the States. The Danish police, are, as far as I know, they're not known to be brutal or violent in any way. So anyway, this nice young police officer came over and he said, "Hi, how are you doing?" and so on. And he said, "Dick, would you mind just showing me some ID?" And I totally, for me, this is a matter of principles, you know. I walked down the street. Why on earth should I show ID? You know, I did not do anything. So I said, "I'm very sorry, but I don't want to do that." And I said, "Have I done anything? Am I suspected of anything? And why on earth did you stop me?" You know, he said, no, but it's just normal procedure." Well, I said, "It's not normal in my world. And the last time I was in Denmark, it was not a police state. So I'm sorry."
Hey, papers, please. Yeah, I mean, wasn't it the Nazis who were famous for that? Papers, that, please.
You check history, you know, Stalin, Hitler, you name it. These dictators, that's what they do. And that's why it's not okay to just accept these things. You know, it was nothing. I wasn't trying to hide my...
See, this is the beautiful thing about the New World Order, Oli, is when the Bilderbergers finish their plan, we'll all be microchipped and nobody will ever ask us for our papers. They'll just scan us as we walk by.
But the way I see it, the New World Order, you might as well call it the Fourth Reich, because they follow the exact same agenda, the exact same template, the exact same way of doing things. So it's a very scary development if we don't stop it, you know.
Right. Well, this year's Bilderberg meeting, you know, it's interesting because it seemed like it was maybe very, you know, unusually important in that there are huge decisions facing this Western bankster elite right now. Because they lost in Syria, they're facing trouble in the Ukraine. Putin is standing up to them, and they're not quite sure what to do about it. Russia and China are teaming up, which is the ultimate geostrategic nightmare of the Bilderberger Western elite. And so they're facing these crises and trying to figure out what to do about it. And one faction, the neocon extremist faction, basically just wants to fight everywhere. You know, start big false flags, start more wars, fight the Russians, fight the Iranians. You know, and then the peacenik side, which is more associated with the Europeans as opposed to the Americans and Israelis, is interested in doing things like splitting the Iranians off from the Russia-China axis by coming to an agreement with Iran and things like that. So they were making big decisions about war and peace and that could affect our lives profoundly just in the coming year.
I tell you, I think the ship is going down. It's falling apart around them. You know, this exposure, they have been able to get away with this because they've been hiding in the dark, you know, and now there's this massive spotlight right on them. And there was one, you know, the TV news in Denmark, as far as I know, have never, ever even mentioned this group. And this year I was part of just a little part of this whole thing, but it was like 15 minutes, I think, 10 or 15 minutes, where they interviewed five Danish Bilderbergers. Asking them about this group and the agenda and why it's so secretive. And you know, sometimes I know that it's not like a big thing really, but at the same time it is, because they have been so secretive, you know, and now they're suddenly out in the open. Now they're trying to give the, you know, the good guy polished image of the whole group, you know, but we're just kind people, you know, who wants to meet for a coffee. What's the big problem, you know? But sometimes when people say things and avoid the real truth, it comes out so odd, you know. It's like this, the Danish some kind of minister, she said that I don't understand this whole thing. Why are people so concerned? I mean, I just want to meet people, inspiring people from other countries, so, and learn from them so that I can do a better job for the Danes. And also, it's so nice for us to just be able to meet on our own without having to answer questions to the media and without having a camera stuck up our face and so on. So what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that you're meeting in total secrecy with NATO surveillance paid by taxpayers, meeting foreign ministers on foreign ground all of these type of odd people. And I mean, it's called treason for some of these politicians. So, I mean, I think it's a very big deal.
It reminds me of that David Rockefeller quote where he said something like, you know, some conspiracy theorists say that my family has been working to, you know, try to overthrow national sovereignty and bring nations together in these big international organizations and create a more globalized world. Well, if that's the charge, I plead
I'm
guilty.
I'm proud.
Yeah, and I'm proud of it. Yeah. So, from their point of view, I can see why they see the world this way. I mean, they're in charge. They're ruling the world. And they look at history and they probably figure that the best thing that can happen is if we, the wise, all-powerful rulers, keep sort of shepherding the world towards one world government, and we try to achieve it without a war, because of course in the past, you know, all major, conglomerations of countries, you know, it makes a country bigger, have always happened through wars. And now we're at a time when wars would be so destructive that most sane people don't want to fight them. So I think some of these internationalists probably don't, you know, have the bad motives that we sometimes attribute to them. You know, they might be thinking that they're doing the best they can in a tough situation. But then again, there are these fanatical neocon types who actually worship war. They feel that war is what gives life meaning. And I think Chris Hedges used that in one of his titles. And that was a big issue this year, apparently, according to Daniel Estulin. He said there was a whole session at the Bilderberg Conference that appears to have been called by neocons, people like that, and his description of the agenda item was, quote, "Critics of the U.S. president blame him for betraying America's leadership overseas, citing failures to defend America's interests in Syria and lately in Ukraine. Obama's newly announced doctrine calls on scaling down reliance on military force and using diplomacy and collective action instead. Bilderberg members will discuss whether this policy is doomed." Well, you know, so these are people who think that Obama is too much of a dove, and they want to go back to the Bush-Cheney doctrine of just launching crazy invasions of foreign lands just for the heck of it. And I sure hope they didn't carry the day.
I think, you know, inside the Bilderberg group, it's very compartmentalized as well. You know, you've got the steering committee. They know what's going on. But then many of the people that are just invited once or twice, you know, I think they have absolutely no idea, and they're being used. I don't think all of them wake up and every morning think, oh my God, what type of evil thing can I do to the world today? I don't think most of them are that type of people. But when you put the whole thing together, and the agenda, and where everybody is playing the role, the whole machine, that is so destructive to the rest of the world. So it needs to be exposed big time.
Absolutely. And there is this new wave of populism driven by the awareness that people are getting, some firsthand by listening to shows like this, other secondhand, you know, from seeing it on social media, hearing about it. And this awareness, I think, is trickling out there. Eric Cantor, the ultra-Zionist Republican no good Nick, just got horribly drubbed in a primary election here. And I think that this kind of populism, which was expressed through the Tea Party in this particular case, is a result of this exposure of the elite. And likewise, we had a huge reaction in Europe against the EU recently in the parliamentary elections. And we've had other examples of this new populism. Do you think that, like, in a year or two, it's going to be even bigger?
I think the ship is going down. I really think, you know, there's so many. You had the war tribune in Kuala Lumpur when George Bush Jr. and Dick Cheney and other people, Tony Blair, was charged with crimes against humanity for starting the Iraq war and so on for no reason. They were sentenced, and the sentence was given to the war court in Hague. Now, there's just been this court case against the English Queen, Elizabeth Windsor II, and the former Pope for child genocide. I mean, these are heavy accusations. And these untouchables are no longer untouchable. And I think this is why Queen Beatrix, she freaked out. She left. Now the Spanish king is say, I'm out of here. You know, the Pope said goodbye, farewell. I think this is just, these are the first ones. We've had a lot of bankers who've said bye-bye as well, who's jumping off the ship as well. So I think we're going to see in the very near future, it's going to be a whole long line of people, you know, trying to jump off. And I can only say I welcome members of the elite who's got some kind of balls instead of hiding as absolute cowards. I mean, their actions over the years has been absolutely awful. So cowards, cowardly. But now to step forward with some kind of dignity and reveal, you know, become whistleblowers, reveal what they've been part of and redeem themselves, take whatever punishment, but stand up in transparency and say, this is what I have been part of. And so we can heal this beautiful place. You know, it's enough with all of this war and destruction and crap in, you know, from inside groups like this. It needs to stop. It really needs. And I think all of us needs to look in the mirror and say, am I in any way part of this? I mean, you, in your country, I mean, you are being hammered at the moment with all these. I mean, just take FEMA camps for one thing. I mean, all the people working in FEMA camps or supplying food or electricians or installing bathrooms or whatever, these type of people or people in uniform, both police and soldiers, or any type of people, surveillance people who manufacture them or supply them or control them, all of us, all of you, have to wake up and see, my God, what am I part of? Check out history. There's going to be a time not so far down the line where people who have been working for the soul, who would be labeled as the enemy, will not be looked upon with mild eyes. They will be looked upon like traitors. Study history. Check out what happened around Hitler before and after, and how people were treated before and after, how the whole setup was done, and check out for modern history, and you will see the exact parallels. They are using the same agenda, the exact same different steps to come to what they try to accomplish, a total control with an elite few, and the rest of us slaves. And they don't even want all of us as slaves. They want to depopulate a lot of us by vaccines and chemtrails and you name what. I mean, not a very pretty future if we let them get away with it. So I think it's crucial to be fearless, brave, and stand up and choose and just expose them. Non-violent. I'm totally against hitting back with violence, because if you do that, they will just use that as an excuse to squash us, and violence is their language.
And especially kind of senseless, random violence against innocent people. That's, you know, that's what we just saw in Las Vegas. These guys, you know, act like they're Alex Jones fans, but then they're just, you know, shooting a couple of totally innocent people and claiming that is starting the revolution. How bizarre. This is sort of like Al-Qaeda, so-called Al-Qaeda. I call it Al-Qaeda if you want, running around blowing up innocent people, almost all of them their fellow Muslims, and this is supposedly Islamic revolution? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, use your normal brain. And I tell you, without having, was it in Las Vegas? I haven't even looked into it. If I look into it, I can bet, I mean, you're welcome to chop off my right arm if that is not a false flag operation. I mean, come on. It's just getting to a ridiculous.
Well, you know, Las Vegas is owned by Sheldon Adelson, and so it's a mafia town, and it would be the easiest thing in the world to grab some sort of alienated couple like this couple and do a little MK Ultra number on them and turn them loose. And I'll bet that's probably what happened.
You tell me. I don't even have the strength to go into all of these, because it's just on a level that is ridiculous. And I want to say to the people behind these false flag operation, come on, give it up. I mean, it's ridiculous. Not even you can be proud of them anymore. I mean, at least in the old days with JFK and 9/11, and so you had some kind of budget and preparation and skill But now it's, using the same actors. One time you blow them. Giving interviews and someone, come on, stop it. We're not buying it anymore.
Well, and as this globalist thing falls apart, and I think you're right, I think it is falling apart, Russia and China standing up against it like this really could sound the death knell of this Western-driven sort of Zionist bankster globalism, which Bilderberg represents. But I'm a little bit concerned about what could be coming next because, if there's one thing that's worse than the internationalists, as bad as they are, it's the hyper-nationalists. And so, people rejecting the European Union, I don't blame them. I understand why they would. But at the same time, there is this, extreme right-wing nationalist current that's rising in many countries, including Ukraine, where that's a lot of what drove this coup d'etat that started the current crisis. And if the world becomes a lot more nationalistic, then the elite is going to be tempted to use that to start World War III and achieve their depopulation agenda by pulling the strings of the nationalists who were going to go to war. The reason we haven't had any wars since World War II is largely that this, internationalist elite has risen and managed affairs in such a way that despite all of the slaughter, at least we haven't blown up the world. But, as the world becomes more rabidly nationalistic, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that the populist awakening does not go ultra-nationalistic. I hope it stays kind of idealistic and reasonable and, in a sense, post-nationalistic.
These are challenging times. Nobody can read the future. It's. Everybody needs to focus on the one that looks back to you in the mirror, and deep in your soul what is right and what is wrong. And the more of us who understands that and start living by examples, following these rules that we've been giving. Most religion, if not all of them, have this as a basis, Do not hurt anyone else. Do not do things to someone else that you don't want them to do to you. Follow love instead of fear. Don't hurt things. Don't hurt the world. You go to Islam, you go to what Jesus said. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about the basic wisdom of these people. We have it inside of it. Children have it when they're born. They grow up and then they grow out of it because we adults are so messed up, but we know inside ourselves. So I would really try and, I have absolutely no idea. I don't have any solutions. I do have no idea what the future is going to be. But my focus is going to be totally focused on a united mankind. How that is going to be done, I have no idea about. But that is my focus, to unite mankind in total harmony. And I'm going to try and do my part to that until the day I stop breathing. And if I succeed, wonderful. If not, I'm going to die surprised.
Well, amen, brother. I couldn't say that better myself. And thank you. We've come to the end of the hour. Oli Damgaard, I appreciate your terrific work. Your website is lightonconspiracies.com. Is that right?
That is indeed.
Lightonconspiracies.com. All right. And your book is Light on Conspiracies.
No, the book is Coup d'etat in slow motion.
Yeah, Coup d'etat in slow motion. Okay.
And if anybody wants to support me, it's extremely appreciated if you would sign up for my newsletter or become a member or buy a book or something like that. And Kevin, would it be okay if I end this with a prayer?
Please do.
I'm not a religious person, but I strongly feel for this prayer, and it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light.
Amen, brother. All right. Well, thank you so much, Oli Damgaard. Look forward to the next one, inshallah. Take care.
Anytime you need me, I'm right here.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. No matter how many years it will take.